This is HPR episode 2164 entitled, Kippo Tabletop Game. It is hosted by Klaatu and is about 22 minutes long. The summary is, Klaatu talks about the surprisingly amazing game from Mattel.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
You're listening to Hacker Public Radio. My name is Klaatu. This episode's about Skip-Bo, the card game that broke tabletop gaming for me. So Skip-Bo is this really simple card game by the makers of Uno. So it's like one of those classic kind of card games that you're going to find in, you know, the local town general store. It's not a themed card game. And this, for me, when I was gifted this game, when I saw it, I just didn't want to play it at all. There was nothing about this game that made me curious to play it whatsoever. Like, the cards are all sort of designed in these bright primary colors. There's absolutely no thematic element to it. Not even a suggestion or a hint of a backstory. You know, there's no story to this game. It's they didn't even try, you know? Like, they could have at least, in my mind, when I was looking at it, it's like they could have at least called it, you know, Gold Rush 48 or Gold Rush 48. Let's go with that. And then you would have gotten like 48 cards and they would have all been themed with the Old West. The backstory would be that you're a gold miner and that you have to collect these things in this particular order in order to strike gold or something. And you have to talk like a cowboy the entire game. They could have done something to make it more imaginative, right? But all it was these, by the way, I don't want to play Gold Rush 48. That's a really dumb idea. But my point is, they could have made it more thematic. They could have skinned it with something for me. But instead, they just delivered like these cards, primary colors, big numbers. You know, it looks like a child's game. It looks like Uno. It looks like something I played when I was in third grade. And I was really disappointed and really just absolutely did not want to play. Had no interest in this game whatsoever. And I was polite and I was like, oh, thank you. You heard that I liked card games and you gave me a card game. That's so nice of you. Thank you so much. And, you know, put it on the shelf, vowed never to touch it. But I could re-gift it. I'd probably, like, re-gift it next year. So, that was that. And then, as luck would have it, me and the girlfriend were sitting around thinking, oh, we only have like two-player games. We should try to find another two-player game. And then our eyes fall on this stupid Skip-Bo box on the shelf. And we're like, well, if we open it really carefully, maybe we can re-gift it still. You know, we'll do like one of those like slightly used re-gifting, but we'll open it super, super carefully so it looks unopened. And we'll play around just to see, just to convince ourselves that it's not a good game. Okay, so the gameplay is actually pretty complex. Like, especially, you know, if you've played any of those sort of new kind of like modern themed card games that people think of when they say fancy terms like tabletop gaming instead of, yeah, it's a card game. You know, their rules are frequently really well actually done. They're like, you know, one page, one side of one page, big numbers. They're like, do this, do that, on each turn do this or this, and then start playing. And then maybe there's some like additional rules afterwards. You know, it's like, oh, by the way, if you run into this situation, this is what to do. But you know, they kind of like, they get you up and running fast. And they don't expect you to, like, sit down and study the rules for an afternoon before engaging. Well, unless you're playing Magic the Gathering. Then you basically need, like, a degree. But Skip-Bo, the rule set is, yeah, it's it is not nice. It's small print. It gives you a lot of detail. It throws a lot of terms around, and it's a little bit intimidating. And in a way, I kind of noticed that, you know, like Parker Brothers or Hasbro or whoever this Skip-Bo thing is by, they still haven't gotten the memo, you know, like they're kind of like, it's kind of like the Microsoft of card design, you know. It's kind of like, hey guys, if you give people instructions that are short and simple, people get started a lot faster and they don't feel like there's as much of a barrier to entry. But apparently it didn't matter that much, because we read through all the instructions, and it's simpler actually than it seems. So the first hurdle that you have to get over is the sheer number of cards involved. Each player gets 30 cards in their reserve deck, and then 5 in their hand. So 30 cards initially. We never play with 30 cards, me and my girlfriend, but you're supposed to get 30 cards, and you set them down on the table face down. And that's the deck that you have to burn through. So you each have a deck of about 30 or 11 or whatever you're playing with cards that you have to burn through the course of the game. And the way that you burn through those cards is you set them on the play area of the table face up. But you have to do that numerically. So what you do is, on this stack of 30 cards, you turn over one, you know, you turn the top card over. Whatever that number is, you need to get to that number in the play area, and then you can take that card, complete the sequence with it, and then turn over the next card. The play area gets populated by the cards from each player's hand. So if you've got 5 cards in your hand and you have a number 1, then you take 1 and you put it in the middle of the table. And then the next player, if they have a 2, they can put 2 down. And then if you have 3, you put a 3 down. And then, oh look, the top card on your reserve deck, on the thing that you have to burn through, that's a 4. So we'll take the 4 from our reserve deck, put it down, and then flip the card over on our reserve deck. And by chance, by coincidence, that's a 5. So we'll take that and put that down. And now we'll turn over the next one. Oh darn, that's an 11. Okay. So what we'll do is we'll keep playing until we get, you know, near, till we get to 10, and then we'll put down the 11. And that's the sequence of events in an ideal world. What really happens, of course, is that you've got a 3 on your deck, and so you get 1, and then the next player doesn't do anything, says, oh, I can't put any cards down. So you put a 2 down. Well, no, that wouldn't actually illustrate my example. So what happens is that the other opponent says, oh, I've got a 2. So they put down a 2, and you're thinking, oh, perfect, this is my chance to put my 3 down. But your other player has a 3 in their hand, so they put that down. And so now you're screwed, because you don't have, you know, you've got this 3 on your burner deck, and you don't have a place to put it. So now you've got to get to go through a whole other cycle so that you can put your 3 down. And all the time you're just hoping that your opponent isn't going to screw you over with another 3 or whatever. Of course, add to that the fact that your opponent has their own cards to burn through, so there's that element. So you kind of want to not help your opponent, but at the same time, it's always within your benefit to keep that card, that the playing, you know, that deck, that sequence, you want to keep it turning over. The added complexity, again, comes in that there's not just one deck in the middle of the table. You can have 4 active counters. So if you've got a 1 and a 1 and a 2, then you could put the 1 down on one deck, 1 down again on another deck, and then the 2 on either of them. You know, so you've got 4 active counters in the middle of the table. So you and your partner are managing 4, or your opponent are managing 4 different active decks that are counting up towards 12, at which point they reset to 1. You've got your burner deck, you've got the cards in your hand, and then there's yet four more decks that I forgot to tell you about, and that is that you've got discard piles. So if you've got five cards in your hand, and you've played all the cards, you know, you take one out, you take a three, and you take a six for another one, so now you've got three cards. If you're at the point in your turn where you cannot play another card, you take yet another card from your hand and then put it on a reserve or a discard pile or a keeper pile, let's call it, in front of you. And you can have up to four keeper piles. So it's within your benefit, again, to kind of keep important cards sort of almost in sequence in front of you. And the way that me and my girlfriend play it anyway is that you're not allowed to kind of rifle through your keeper deck or your keeper decks. You can't look and see what you have. Like, the only thing that anyone can see are the top numbers. I don't know if that's official rule or not. That's just kind of how we felt it should be played. But yeah, and you can take from those keeper decks anytime you need another number. So sometimes there can be turns where you just go through like 10 cards at a time because you just, you know, you find a one in your hand and then, oh, looky, you've got a two over here in your keeper pile. So you put that down and then, oh, look, you've got a three at the top of your burner deck. You put that down and then, oh, a four in your hand. Okay, you got that. And then, oh, look, there's a five in your keeper. And so it just, you know, you play as long as you can. And it's just this. When that happens, it is like it's a rush. You know, you just feel amazing. You feel like you are just the coolest card player on earth. You know, it's just like you're just burning through cards, and your opponent's just sitting there turning into a puddle of disappointment. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful experience. Of course, to add to all of that complexity, there's a wild card. And the wild card is called Skip-Bo, so that's, I guess, why they call it Skip-Bo. I don't know. Skip-Bo. It's a horrible name. I mean, Gold Rush 48 or whatever I came up with wasn't terribly good, but man, it's better than Skip-Bo. And the wild card you just play, you know, as a wild card. So that kind of adds just, you know, yet another element of complete randomness to the sequence of the game. It is a really, really fun game. It is obviously a numbers game. It is, you know, it's very kind of the mechanic is very straight. It is exactly what you would expect from a set of cards, you know, like a set of cards. Oh, they are numbers. And the more I play the themed card games, I guess, the more sometimes I realize that ultimately, if you cut through all the glitz and glamour and theme, it's just their numbers, you know? The theme sometimes helps you remember something about that number, and it abstracts it away from being a number, but ultimately you can say that it's a numbers game, you know? Like, even in something like Coup, for instance, certain cards are higher in, say, power than others. And whether you have a certain card or not is a Boolean. So, you know, it all boils down to that kind of, like technically speaking, it could be played with a 52-card poker deck. And so could Skip-Bo, I guess. But you'd have to have a lot of cards because I'm not sure the percentage of each card, you know, in the deck. But the deck is huge. Like, the default Skip-Bo box that you get from the store has three decks in it. So it's got to be at least 150 cards total. And like I say, I mean, the apparently what they intend you to do is play with a 30-card burner deck or reserve deck or whatever they call it. They don't intend for it to be a short game. They don't intend for it to be a simple game. It is a game where you are managing a lot of things. But trust me, it really, really works. It's amazingly well done. And in terms of, well, in terms of two-player mechanics, it's perfect. It's great for two players. In fact, I believe I've only played it as a two-player game now that I'm saying it. So I don't know how it is with more people, actually. Two-player, it's brilliant. It is a brilliant game, hands down brilliant. Replayable, it is completely replayable. This is not so much a card game as it is an addiction for me and my girlfriend. It's just super fun, and there is a surprising amount of psychology there, because you do kind of have to not maybe anticipate what your opponent's going to do, because I mean your opponent's going to do exactly what you think your opponent's going to do, which is play every card that they possibly can to get it out of their hand, as long as they aren't setting you up for success. So if you're playing a sequence of cards and you see that your opponent's top burner card is an 8 and there's a deck at 4 and you've got a 5, 6, and a 7 in your hand, but you don't want to just hand that to the opponent, so you just play the 5. And then do you play the 6? All right, we're going to play the 6 and just really, really hope that our opponent doesn't have a 7 for their 8. And then we'll end the turn. And then the opponent plays. And what did they have? You know, who knows? Did they have a 7? Did they have a skip bow wild card that they could just throw in there as a 7? Who knows? So it's really, really tricky in that sense. And you do start to get kind of a sense for how your opponent plays the game, which is weird because, like I say, it's fairly straight. Like, there's not a whole lot of strategy per se, other than, yeah, like, when do you play and when do you abstain, but you do get kind of a play style, and from that you can kind of adjust how you play. And either way, I mean, it is largely up to the draw. It really is. Like, at the end of the day, it is largely up to the how, what cards you got dealt, how the discard or how the draw pile is treating you, what you got in your burner deck. You know, it is up to that. But there is the aspect of you having to manage your own keeper cards, you having to deal with what you're going to do for your opponent or what you're going to do to try to screw them over. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's surprisingly addictive and just infinitely replayable. We play it all the time. And yeah, I highly recommend it. I can't say anything for the game's storytelling or their thematic style. They just didn't even try. I mean, not at all. Not even a bit. Which, again, I feel is weird, because I feel like it would have been at least easy to skin it with something, to make it something. Give me something. And they gave me nothing. It was just like primary colors. It looks like something a child would play, but it's really, really fun. So don't let the lack of style scare you away. And that's kind of why I say that it broke tabletop gaming for me, because I'd come to tabletop gaming because I had less interest in things like poker and blackjack and Texas Hold'em and, you know, sort of classic canastas, you know, classic games, bridge, classic games like that, which I completely admit are very fun, and I know that they're fun. But they just don't, they don't inspire, you know, they don't really take me anywhere. Whereas tabletop gaming, like, and I say it, tabletop gaming, you know, very deliberately, it's like, yes, that thing called tabletop gaming, the one with all the fancy boxes and the obligatory pewter figurines or resin figurines and the D6s and the D21s, you know, that tabletop gaming. They go out of their way to make it, you know, you're not playing a card game, you're exploring a fantasy world. And it's like, no, I'm playing a card game. But man, the fantasy art really is cool, so I'm going to go with it. And Skip-Go doesn't do that. It's like very, it's very honest with you. It's like, look, you're playing a card game. You're going to need to know numbers. You're going to need to manage things. You're probably going to want to break out a spreadsheet and just kind of take notes on the percentages that of cards you've seen. This is a game of, you know, this is a game for us, for accountants, not for artists. And that's okay. You know, I mean, like, honestly, it's just as fun and the mechanics are there, and it's just a really, it's a very honest card game. And I like that. It's actually, it works. It works really, really well. Is it better than something like, I don't know, Bridge or Canastas or Texas Hold'em or anything? I don't know. You know, I'm not sure. First of all, I don't know how those play against two players. And second of all, I don't know. I should probably look into some of those. But Skip-Bo, for what it is, for whatever it is a heap of a lot of fun. It's probably not that expensive. I don't know. Like I say, I got it gifted, so I don't really know. But if you see it and you have an opportunity to try it out, seriously, try it out. It is much more fun than its box design would have you believe. The name is horrible, but darn it, it's a fun game. Try it out.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.